The milestone of 1,000 U.S. military dead in Iraq includes combat deaths as well as Americans killed by accidents and other causes. Most of the troops have been killed since President Bush very memorably went to the deck of an aircraft carrier to declare an end to major combat operations last year. NPR's Elaine Corey reports on those who died.
If each of the U.S. troops killed in Iraq were granted a 5-minute audience at the White House, President Bush would be busy shaking hands for 83 hours. The ranks of those killed touch every race and religion and every corner of the country. These young men and roughly 24 women don't fit a single profile, but they are most likely to be 27 years old, white, active duty members of an infantry division. Since Vietnam, there's been a perception that it's the nation's poorest young people who go off to war. But according to many experts, that's not true.
Not the underclass. We do not have an underclass military.
David Siegel, a military sociologist at the University of Maryland, says the poorest quarter of the population tends not to qualify for the military, either because they lack a high school diploma, or they have medical problems, or a felony conviction.
The bottom 25% get screened out by the military. The top 25% kind of screen themselves out. The middle half of the population is what's really overrepresented.
In other words, those killed are mostly from the lower middle or working class. Racially, although whites are somewhat underrepresented in the military overall, a lopsided number of them are among the dead. The opposite is true of African Americans. They have joined the military in proportionately larger numbers, but are less likely to be found in the frontline units that suffered the highest casualties. Many more blacks are serving in combat support positions. Geographically, California, Texas, and New York have had the highest losses. Many of those killed come from small towns. That's where David Siegel says the military has focused its recruiting.
Part of that is regional. It is southern, and that's where the young people are. Part of it is that those areas have a tradition of military service. And you're talking about areas that are likely to have depressed economies.
News of yesterday's milestone brought a quick response from administration officials. At a Pentagon news conference, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld insisted the mounting death toll would not deter the U.S. war on global terror. While President Bush spoke at a campaign rally, his spokesman Scott McClellan said the nation mourns the loss of every fallen soldier.
They have made the ultimate sacrifice defending freedom and working to spread democracy in a volatile region of the world. And then transforming the Middle East will make the world a better place and make America more secure. And so we honor all of the fallen.
All but 138 U.S. deaths took place after President Bush declared the end of major combat in Iraq. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry cited the rising death toll in attacking the president's decision to go to war. But Kerry said he, too, honors the service of those killed.
We will always stand up and fight for what they have fought for. And their sacrifice will not be in vain. We are committed to making the right decisions in Iraq and the right decisions for them here at home.
Surpassing this painful milestone may have no discernible impact on the fighting in Iraq, but David Feaver, a political science professor at Duke University, says it will prompt Americans to reflect on the course of the war.
People will stop, take a pause, do a gut check, and reevaluate the Iraq war because of the attention on the 1,000th casualty. And so, in that sense, I think it could have a profound effect.
Feaver says people will assess the war on two key questions, whether it was right to wage war in the first place, and whether ultimately the U.S. will win. He says their conclusions could influence the outcome of November's election. Elaine Corey, NPR News.